Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, and apologies. I have had a week or so away due to a family matter, but welcome back to the Wilson Weekly with Dr. Andrew Wilson and myself. Doc, it has been too long. How are you, my friend?
Yes, I'm good, Graham. And, you know, every week you go by, there's even more news in property. Of course, we've had a lot of news over the last couple of weeks. And for those that missed out, we do have a report now of our podcast, so you can get a PDF copy of the content of the last couple of weeks. So you really haven't missed anything except, of course, for that great commentary that Graham and I provide. So you do need the context, but if you're looking for the data, we've certainly got those reports in full for the last 2 weeks, and we will be providing PDF reports of our podcast. So that's just the data, the slides, so you can use that as a resource. If you're looking to have the latest market data and economic data and all that we do discuss here. So, so it's all good, but we are back now in full operating mode, and it's been another busy week. I was saying before, Graham, that I was sort of thinking there's something missing this week in terms when I put all the data together, and I thought, hang on, it's the first weekend of the month. And we surely, don't we have the RBA reporting on the first week, Tuesday of every month? And I thought, ooh, what's happened? Have I missed it? What have I done? So I checked up, and, of course, we are now in the new era for RBA meetings. So we had the February one. Yeah. And I didn't, sort of gel with that, you know, it would start this soon. But, of course, we had a February meeting. But we haven't had a March meeting. Well, we haven't had the traditional March meeting, Graham, but we are going to have one in 2 weeks' time.
So I did the same, Doc. I'm like, I was planning some webinars and some free education. I went, oh, hang on, there's not going to be what am I doing? I'm not going to have any information to share with anyone on that day. I was a bit out of sorts.
Yeah. So I checked it out and I went back, and I usually get. I'm on a couple of programs which forecast what the RBA is going to do, and I hadn't heard, and I thought, oh yeah. And, but it's been very, very busy. We've had house price report, rent report, which we'll look at today for the month, and then, as I said, I checked the schedule, which was actually a little hard to find. I don't know whether they're hiding it because they don't want it revealed. But I'm searching around. Finally, I found their schedule. And it says that the next meeting will be in 2 weeks' time, which I think is the 19th of March.
It is.
So which is a little strange. So it's going to be in the middle of the month, which probably helps them to some degree because they would have had the data coming out from the ABS. So they're sort of up to date with the latest data. But then there's no meeting in April. So that's it. So the next meeting will be in May, and then there's not a meeting till towards the end of June because they're only having 8 meetings this year, not the normal 11 meetings. So, it gives us a little bit less to speak about, except for in 2 weeks' time when we'll discuss what they've said. But, so we both sort of fell into the same trap. Probably everybody else did too.
Well, it's interesting about Doc. While I've been away the last week or two, I've heard a lot of mainstream media, a lot of hype around, oh, inflation's great, it's under control, we're going to have rate decreases shortly. Let's comment on that for a moment here. Like, we've had a little bit of a positive set of data come out for inflation, and all of a sudden rates can drop. Is that what's going to happen, is it?
I very much doubt that, Graham, and that's what the Reserve. I'm surprised that we are still getting that traction, particularly after what the Reserve Bank governor said. And I think we spoke about that in the last podcast. That she was quite adamant that you can't rule out another rate increase, and she was dismissive of any sense of having a rate cut. This is just, it's becoming, I guess, more blind-sided commentary from the financial media. And that's desperation.
Cheap headline, Doc, bit of clickbait, gets readers in there.
Absolutely. Mind you,
it affects consumer sentiment. People see it or hear it. It absorbs. They start to make financial decisions off these headlines.
That's right. So you've got to be very, very careful who you listen to. Surely you would have learned your lesson about all the silly headlines of the last couple of years, particularly in response to, in relation to house price crash, you know, doom and gloom. No, it didn't happen. In fact, Graham, guess what? It's a big year in prospect for our housing markets again. And even those that predicted quite a modest, you know, subdued year this year are revisiting that, because I think we're going to see, particularly from those very strong markets, Adelaide, Brisbane and Perth, maybe another double-figure result this year.
No, stop it, Doc. You're going to even have to adjust your forecast, which are pretty positive.
Yes. And
I did say that on stage at one of our events a month or two ago. A doctor said, I reckon we might push down. You went, well, you know, I don't know.
Well, it's there is momentum, the big mo in housing markets at the moment. Let me be very specific about that. And that Sydney market is just flying again. So any sense that it was headed for a pause, you know, that affordability issues, which we did discuss, had maybe brought the market down a little bit towards the end of last year, not happening at the moment. And when we look at the latest auction results, Graham, we'll talk about that in more depth. Once again, Sydney's just burning along, you know, very strong result. You know, we're well and truly into the year in terms of the housing market. So this isn't just sort of like early season volatility. There's a consistency there in terms of what's happening. And as we, when you look at the report of our previous podcast, and I urge everyone to have a look at that one, you can see the latest housing market report, which showed some very solid results for our capital city markets, particularly Sydney, Adelaide, Brisbane and Perth. And as I said, Adelaide, Brisbane and Perth are just flying along at the moment. And Sydney doing okay. Melbourne's still a little bit subdued, but, you know, like you said, there's plenty of clickbait around, desperate media, desperate for, you know, people looking at their product to look at their product in whatever mechanism they use. So they're going to say anything. And, of course, if you read these stories, there's always that little disclaimer somewhere there, like should be, would be, could be, you know, maybe, you know, blah, blah, blah. So you look back, they could say, well, we didn't say for sure it was going to happen. We just had the big headline, interest rate cuts to come, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Is that like the or is that like the 100% chance of a rate movement in the USA?
Yeah. And that's now, that was to happen in March. Guess what that's down to now, Graham? It's down to zero. No chance of an interest rate cut in the US. And all the financial media, and of course, unfortunately, a lot of our media don't have originality flowing through their veins. So they follow what they see as happening, particularly in the US, and they thought, here's a good storyline. Let's follow our comrades in the US and go with the interest rate cut story. And they look just as silly, because our rates are a percent below the US anyway, Graham. So, and that's what the Reserve Bank governor said, to her credit, that we're still well below where the US are. So even if they started cutting rates, it doesn't necessarily follow that we're going to be cutting rates, given ours are so much lower. And there would be significant implications for, you know, for our dollar. You know, if we were cutting rates and already we're lower than the US, it would, you know, again, cause more interest in US equities than in ours. So ignore that, please. You know, listen to us. We have a rational view of the market in terms of what's driving it. And we'll look at today again, Graham. And, you know, the data's coming through. For those that are trying to talk up falling inflation, I'm afraid the data is getting a little bit mixed out there. And as the Reserve Bank governor said, there's no, there's still a possibility. Don't rule out the possibility of interest rate increases. So that would certainly make the financial media look pretty silly if we actually ended up having some increases. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but you need to be very careful about making financial decisions based on clickbait. But as I said, there's no, those that promote these cheap headlines, you know, have no sense of, you know, credibility in terms of saying, oh, well, we were wrong, let's move on. Who cares? As long as you read our article, that's all that counts. But we will look at some data today, Graham, that does help us again to put together the jigsaw puzzle of where interest rates are going. But as I said, those US rates are certainly going nowhere. In fact, the governor, the head of the Reserve, the head of the Fed, he's been talking about, you know, don't rule out higher interest rates down the track. So, you know, it's those headlines are looking a little bit shabby, in my opinion. So shall we start to talk about this week in property?
Let's cut the headlines and let's look at the data, shall we, Doc?
Yes. So this is this week in property, Graham, as we present every week. As I said, we also have a PDF copy of this particular podcast, so you can get a, as well as the audio video copy and the YouTube copy, we also have a PDF copy of the data, which is valuable for those that are interested in it. So week ending today, March the 6th, we're going to look at the February rent report. Unfortunately, not good news there for tenants. I suppose we keep saying the same thing every month. You know, bad news, crisis in the rental market, and that's continuing. We're going to look at the latest retail sales data, which saw a bounce back in retail sales. So, again, not good news for those predicting lower interest rates. And January building approvals, I'm sorry, but again, even though there was a little bit of an uptick in building approvals, it was because of a surge in apartments, and it's very concerning to see that approvals for houses is falling quite sharply now, Graham. And as we know, even if we're getting a surge in apartment approvals, it takes years to get those apartments to actually be, you know, lived in. So that's a real lagged, you know, driver of more supply, and we certainly need it. And we'll look at the latest weekend auction results. We've officially started the autumn selling season. So let's see how the autumn selling season started. And, of course, it's following what has been a record February for the auction market. Weekend auction markets, Graham, were the strongest they've ever been over February.
The market's going to crash.
Mate, highest number of sales on record over February.
Nah, the market's going to crash, Doc. That's nonsense. I don't know where you got that data from. It's going to crash.
We'll see. But
I'm on your team, Doc. I'm just parroting to you about 30, 40 comments on some of our data on social media. The market's going to crash. The crash is coming. And I'm like, oh, cry me a river. You know, the boy who cried wolf.
Yeah, well, look, it's not just the single data sets, and we always say that here. We use a variety of data sets, so we use correlating data. It's not just looking at house prices. We look at a number of factors that obviously generate demand and supply in the housing markets, and that helps us create a rich and, by and large, you know, accurate insights into the housing market.
You've been pretty bang on for the last couple of years, Doc, that's for sure.
Well, to be quite honest, Graham, it's the last couple of decades, but we won't go there. let's move on. We don't want more, you know, nasty comments being made about my lack of humility. Okay, so let's have a look at the latest. Rent report.
This is concerning, Doc. This has not become less concerning month on month. This is more pain. Let's be very clear. This is more pain for families.
Oh, terrible news, Graham. And this is the point, as we've been saying. And this, we're now well into the second year of a crisis. Can we use that word in the rental market? Yeah. So, and no sign really that this is going to get better anytime soon. Even with the government's policies to restrict migration, we still aren't getting the supply coming through. And when we look at the data, I think there's some interesting insights we can postulate on, that we can think about why we're seeing some of these changes. So let's have a look at the data. Tight rental vacancies were even lower over February. Can you believe that? And rents were up. So housing markets continue to be tough going for tenants. Low vacancy rates have continued over February, record low vacancy rates. And although unit rents showed some signs of easing, house rents are still rising in most capitals. And I think this is interesting, Graham. And when we look at the data, we can see. So let's first have a look at house, what happened with house price. So we can see every capital city, with the exception of Hobart, had higher house rents over the month, with Adelaide and Perth and Sydney steady. So upward movement there. But the real sobering stuff was that vacancy rates had were starting to fall again in our house vacancy rates were falling. And look at that rise over the year. You know, most of the major capitals are reporting increases of over 10%, close to 20% in some of those capitals for rents over the year. So how do you absorb a 10 to 20% increase out of your family budget, Graham, for rents? You know, when you've got high inflation, well, relatively high inflation to deal with as well. And the point is that even if you can secure a property and you're worried about rental increases, the problem is actually securing the property in the first place, because we're still seeing, you know, scores of people outside prospective, you know, properties that are advertised for rent. So you've got to be one of the lucky ones, or the lucky one, out of all those that are pitching to get that particular property as a tenant. Mm. So, you know, really tough times. When we look at Sydney, 7,880 is the median rent in Sydney, which is still nearly $200 a week higher than the Melbourne median. And as we've discussed in our recent reports, the Sydney and Melbourne average weekly earnings are about the same, Graham. So, they're earning about the same sort of money, and yet in Sydney you've got to pay $200 a week more for rent for a house.
Which is surprising, Doc, because you would expect then that the Melbourneites have more discretionary net income, household income. Yes. Given that the incomes are similar, but the rents, there's such a disparity. So I'm expecting that Melbourne market to recover a lot stronger than it is to date, we keep talking about.
Well, it is, Graham, and the difference between Melbourne and Sydney is certainly closing. And when we look at units, we can see it's closing fast, because it is an affordability advantage that Melbourne has compared to Sydney, given that they have the same sort of incomes. And you know, Melbourne house rents are also below Brisbane, Adelaide and Perth. So it just shows you that there's some value there. But I think what's happening, and we'll have a look at units, right? So units, we had a little bit of easing in rents. Sydney, Brisbane and Adelaide down 1.6%. Hobart and Darwin were also down over the month. But vacancy rates were also tighter in that in the unit markets. So even though those vacancy rates are crazy, we go back and look at the house vacancy rates, Graham, we can see that the worst is 1% in Canberra. I mean, they're heading to like zero, like absolutely no vacancy. It is insane. And they're still heading south. So these are, look, 0.4% in Adelaide, 0.4% in Perth, you know.
I tell you what, Patrick, you look at, you know, you've got a lot of 10s, 11s, 16s, 15s, 14s. If you just slide back to units for a second, Doc, and you look at this yearly change, we're at 15, 19, 18.7, 20. Doc, you're talking about a unit that's renting for $500 a week has gone up to like $600 in most. You're talking Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, Perth. Like, they are astronomical increases for unit rental prices across Australia.
So, I mean, we're not really blowing this up or over blowing it when we say it's a crisis. You know, this is very difficult time. And we can see that, as I mentioned, Melbourne unit rents up 2.2% over the month. And Melbourne unit rents are now up 19.6%, Graham. I think they're certainly the difference between Melbourne and Sydney rents is closer for units than it is for houses. And I think that's where we're seeing the growth, particularly as the academic year starts. We have more migrants coming in, particularly to Melbourne, and that's putting more demand on an undersupplied market. But tell you what I think is happening, Graham. We tend to get these shifts from month to month in demand for either units or houses, where we see houses rising, vacancy rates falling. Then we see maybe some easing in units, but and vacancy rates remaining the same. What I think is happening, and we've discussed this as well, is that this terrible rental market is starting to create social change in terms of the preferences that people have for their accommodation. And I think that what happens, of course, is that people start thinking, well, I can't afford, my family or myself personally can't afford to live in this sized accommodation. So I have to look for something which is more economical. Mm. So you have those that think, okay, well, I was going to go into a house. Now I've got to go to a unit, which is typically cheaper, but it's smaller. So I've just got to have to make do with the lack of space that I would have compared to a house. But then you start seeing rents rise in the units, and then people start thinking, well, I've got to go back to a house, but I can get into a house, but I can share it with another family, or I can share it with someone else. So what's happening is we're seeing a consolidation of actual family units or demand units shifting from units to houses. And I think that's what we've seen perhaps is driving more demand and higher rents for houses recently compared to units. But of course, then it shifts back again, because as those house rents go up, they start thinking, oh, we just can't afford this house. We've got to go back to a unit. So it's like, well, everybody's sleeping in one room, you know.
Yeah.
And I mean, I might be flippant about this, but I do think that this is, you know, part of the evolution of what's occurring. Of course, the other point is that we'll see people staying with their parents longer, you know, thinking about regional accommodation, but we just do not have anywhere near the level of housing to house our population, you know, in the big capitals, the main capitals anyway. And as I said, I think this is creating some of that, you know, those change elements going forward. So February, not a good month. Again, more sobering results, still tight, those vacancy rates, and they're falling again. Which puts relentless upward pressure on rents. Unlikely to have any relief in the foreseeable future. We haven't had any relief because we still have low home building approvals, so those housing shortages aren't going to be refueled, particularly units, because it takes so long for unit developments to come on board. And we still have high migration, despite some moves by the government to sort of cut that. So, sorry, those out there, as tenants, not good news. But, of course, the other end of the pineapple, Graham, is for landlords. Well, you've got plenty.
I was about to say, Doc, for a lot of our listeners, very tough. We spent a bit of time saying how tough this is on families. Really. Yeah. However, if you are a landlord and trying to create long-term wealth and short-term cash flow for your family through taking the risk of investing in real estate, if you got in the last few years with this growth, you've got to be pretty happy with your decision to get into the market.
Yeah, and our latest data
Sorry, Doc, I was just going to say also, remembering that people went in, yes, interest rates have moved substantially, but obviously when leases, we can't put rents up until leases end, but if you've had rates going, oh, no, it's hurting me, but if you're patient, when that lease ends, there's a substantial increase pretty much nationally right now for investors to increase the rent in line with the market, not to be greedy, but just in line with supply and demand.
And Graham, you've got queues of people wanting to rent your property. So it's like, it's not just higher rent, it's maybe a better tenant as well. You know,
this is systemic, Doc. Like, it's absolutely systemic. This isn't going to disappear. Like, we cannot keep up with the rate of demand. We cannot fix the supply. So, I like your comment here on the screen that, you know, that it's sustained relief for tenants from rent increases is unlikely over 2024. Like, this is not going to disappear in a year or a year or two. Like, unless all of a sudden everyone decides to leave Australia, this is a housing crisis. It's a housing crisis. Actually, you've got the word there, chronic housing shortages are exacerbated. Wow.
Yeah, exacerbated. That's right. And, it is tough news for tenants. And it will create social change. I think there's a lot of political heat being generated in this issue, because nothing's worse than if you can't find a roof over your head, Graham. And the other point is I want to make is that we are seeing a rise. And next week we're going to look at the latest home loan data. And even though that's been a little softer over recent months, we've seen a surge in first-home buyer activity. So first-home buyers are up and about because, hey, they don't want to be in the rental market they want to be in the rental market for the shortest period of time possible. And who could blame them? And governments are coming to the party. The Victorian government has a number of schemes for first-home buyers where they have shared equity. And a lot of first-home buyers are taking advantage of that. And as I said, the tougher this rental market becomes, the more likely they are to try to get into their own home. And I think that's a positive thing, to be quite honest, bro. So if you want a copy of the report, there's the QR code, which will link you to a full copy of that report. So let's have a look quickly at the latest data, economic data. Retail sales bounced back over January, up by 1.1%. They're still 1.1% higher over the year, so no sign of higher interest rates to this point, having retail sales tank. That followed a predictable fall of 2.1% over December. Of course, we had a very strong November, as we get every year, because of those Black Friday sales, and December every year now dips away. So that's seasonal issues. And we're still well ahead of where we were compared to the pre-COVID levels, and we're tracking still at the boom levels we had during the stimulus package through COVID. So you can see there, flat retail sales, but they're miles ahead of where we were prior to COVID. So we're still sprinting pretty well, Graham, even notwithstanding the pump up that higher migration and higher inflation does to those numbers. I mentioned home building approvals were up by just 0.3% over January, and that followed a 10.6% December fall. It was all about units again. They bounce around from month to month. Units were up 19.5%, but houses, this is concerning, down 9.9%. That's a big drop for houses, which aren't that volatile, Graham. And this is seasonally adjusted data. Queensland was tops again in terms of building approvals, up by 31.8%, and that reflected a big boom in units in Queensland, particularly on the Gold Coast, where they're trying to keep up with demand there. Lots of new stock coming through, which is good news there. But annual growth levels still remain chronically depressed, although the trend, as we can see there, is starting to flatten out. So hopefully we've now reached the bottom of the falling supply cycle, but we need to get higher, not be flat, Graham, to catch up with what we need in terms of our undersupply.
I was going to say, approvals are one thing, but completions are really important. I mean, they might be getting them approved, but a lot of developers are getting these units approved and then walking away from the sites because they're not feasible to actually build for any profit.
Yeah, and as we know, house building costs have been going through the roof over the past year. They have started to come down significantly, Graham, but next week we're going to look at the latest house building costs, and I've got some bad news there. Following a number of months of lower house building costs, they've actually bounced back again over the latest data over January. So, again, that's not good news for those thinking that interest rates are going to fall because inflation's falling, because house building costs and rents are a significant factor in the inflation rate. So, even though house building costs have been a positive in terms of being lower, they bounce back according to our index over January. Not good. So we look at the data for building approvals. Houses down 9.9% over the month. Not a good result there for houses. Overall up by 0.3% and units up 19.5%. The year to date, which is just the first month of the year, obviously shows some fluctuation, but over the full year, we can see we're still well behind where we were compared to the same year up to January last year. We can see there the fall in the trend. This is what's created our undersupply. We're 38.5% lower in terms of home building approvals compared to where we were at the peak way back in 2016. And you can see there on the slide when we compare houses to units, units have just fallen in a huge hole since that peak in 2016, down by 55.6%. That's crazy. We're building less than half what we were, or approving less than half the units that we were back in 2016, which is 8 years ago, Graham. And a lot of demand has come through the system since then. So far this year, again, this is just 1 month's data. Brisbane's down in terms of capital city results. compared to the same month last year. And no surprise, Melbourne, as usual, bouncing ahead in terms of the overall number of approvals for January. And you can see there big numbers of houses, as usual, for Melbourne. Also, big numbers of units being approved in Melbourne as well, Graham, so far this year. So Melbourne's doing its job in terms of supply, but probably when we look at the other markets, it's the other markets that really need more supply rather than that Melbourne market, you know, where its rental market is certainly performing a lot better from the tenants' perspective than those other capitals where supply coming through is still quite negligible. So let's finish off, Graham, with the weekend auction market report. We know auction clearance rates are a good forward indicator for the housing market in real time because auction clearance rates in both Sydney and Melbourne track the same as house prices, as we can see on those charts. A very strong relationship there between house prices and weekend clearance rates. Last weekend was the first weekend of autumn officially, and they still remain pretty good, those results. And no doubt this year has been a very positive year for the weekend auction market, which will likely translate, as we already know it is, when we look at prices, into higher house prices. So last weekend, of course, we have a long weekend coming up in Melbourne this weekend. Graham, we still had high numbers of auctions in both Sydney and Melbourne, but not as many as the weekend before, which was a record across the board day for auctions in Melbourne and Sydney last weekend. But I mean, the weekend before last. But last weekend, still big numbers, 851 auctions in Sydney. The vacancy rate still pushing in the mid-70s, so that's good news for sellers. Still plenty of competition for properties out there under the hammer. And Melbourne down a little bit, but gee, look at those numbers. Over the past 2 weekends, Melbourne's hosted nearly 2,500 auctions and yet still producing results in the mid-60s. Brisbane down a little bit, but a higher clearance rate in Brisbane. And there's no doubt that Brisbane is a strong market at the moment. Adelaide down a little bit for both clearance rates and auctions, and some early signs there that the Canberra market is starting to pick up after a pretty subdued last 6 months or so for that Canberra market. So a good start to the autumn selling season, Graham. You know, still tracking along, following a record February, and we have a break in Melbourne this weekend for the Labor Day long weekend. And the market will be up and running in 2 weekends there in terms of a full load of buyers and sellers. But nonetheless, particularly good results there in Sydney from high numbers going forward. So we can just see there the Sydney market is higher than where it was over March last year after just 1 weekend. That puts that in context. Melbourne around about the same, a little bit lower than a year ago on the monthly data. Brisbane higher than where it was a year ago, and certainly higher than where it's been really for since winter last year when we had that massive surge in the Brisbane housing market. So some pretty positive news there for Brisbane and southeast Queensland. Adelaide around about where it was a year ago, but starting to build up a little bit of momentum. And Canberra, as I mentioned, just looking a little bit stronger, also the strongest it's been since the middle of last year. So maybe Canberra finally starting to turn the corner. You want that national weekend auction market report? There's the QR code to get hold of that. We have our My Housing Market releases our capital city snapshot on the LinkedIn website, Dr. Andrew Wilson at LinkedIn, Saturdays at 6:30. And then we have the full national report Sundays at 9 p.m. And that previous QR code gives you the latest national weekend report, which also gives you regional breakdowns for Sydney and Melbourne, also top value sales for Canberra, top 10 sales in Canberra, Adelaide and Brisbane. So get hold of that. And of course, we do finish off with the usual plug for the My Housing Market Infinity suburb data app. You want to find out what's going on in your suburb in real time, get onto the app. There's the QR code. You have to go through Infinity to get the password, which Graham loves all those thousands of people who are doing that. Giving them the password. So you can get hold of that. And here's some screenshots of exactly what you can get. It does provide you real-time price information and rent information on a suburb-by-suburb basis for every suburb in Australia that has some data. So you can filter it for price or rent. You can filter it for the state and the region. Here we filtered for Sydney in New South Wales. We've looked at Blacktown as our suburb. We've looked at houses. You can filter for houses, units and townhouses. You can also filter for the number of beds. So we've looked at a 5-bedroom house in Blacktown. And we can see that the current median asking price is $1,243,000, a high price of 1.5, and a low price there of $990,000. And there are 9 listings currently there. So that's a good sense of what's happening in real time in the market. This is updated daily, this data. We'd have the same for rents. So you can see the same slide there. This is a screenshot for rent. So a handy little app, Graham. So if you're
very handy.
And we are, as we say, on the verge, yes, the verge of updating this app to include some more data, which will make it even better, particularly for investors, because we will be including yields and we will be looking at the top yielding regions and suburbs in Australia as well as some sort of a guide to prospects. So next week, January home lending, will we still see first home buyers surging? Why wouldn't they, given how tough the rental market is? January house building costs, I've already given that one away. Bit of a shock result there for house building costs, not good for interest rates. We're going to look at the latest regional house prices. I'll just give you a bit of a clue. Your old stomping ground, Wollongong's come out of the ground very strongly, Graham, with some big results over the past year, with a median now well above $1 million. And, of course, we'll look at the latest weekend auction results, but that will be affected by that long weekend in Melbourne, but certainly a very strong start to the year with most of the data. So that's it for me this week, Graham. I look forward again to next week and with lots more data and lots more chat in regard to just what's being talked about in the housing market. So it's not just about what's being talked about, it's about the data as well and putting that jigsaw puzzle together to figure out if you are making property decisions. Just, let's do it on a scientific basis and not based on, scuttlebutt, if I could say that, all due respect to the media. So,
I look forward to it.
So, yeah, all good, Graham, and good to chat today. And I look forward to catching up with you next week again.
Look forward to it. Actually, I'll see you on the weekend at the masterclass. There's about 400 or 500, couple of hundred people tuning in and learning. So, we'll see you on the weekend.
Yeah, it'd be a big weekend, and I always look forward to that, particularly the Q&A, Graham, because Q&A, which keeps you on your toes, but we love the Q&A, you as the moderator of Q&A, you do a fantastic job, mate.
We do enjoy it, but it's good. People are learning. So, well, thanks as always, Doc. It's good to tune in again this week, and we'll see you on the weekend, and see everyone next week on the podcast again. Thanks, Doc.
Thank you, Graham. Good on you.
Thank you.